Okay, good evening. July 16th, and this is Rabbi Feldman's share. It's being sponsored by Arlene and Michael Sand in memory of Arlene's aunt, Camila Breiner, Miriam Bas-Pinchas.
Thank you. The topic that is suggested for tonight is the topic of human dignity, Kavod HaBrios, as it impacts on halacha, and through that path, Hashkafa as well. It comes to tonight from, let's say, two directions. One is we're here on the eve of the 3 weeks, before next week we'll start the 3 weeks, and that's clearly a time when we focus on interpersonal relations and on the concept of Kavod HaBrios in general, but also, as we'll see, and hopefully we'll finish it tonight and won't run over, it's also a Parshas Balak topic. It comes with Parshas Balak, and we'll explain exactly how. So just by way of introduction, we find a very surprising place that Kavod HaBrios, human dignity in general, has within the halachic framework. I would have thought, instinctively, that if somebody feels that the halacha, observance of the halacha, is going to compromise one's personal sense of dignity, one's personal sense of embarrassment, I would think that their response would be, look, you know, that's what it calls for. There are a lot of inconveniences, a lot of issues sometimes that are connected with observance, so that's also the case. Halacha is going to take absolute priority, even if it's uncomfortable, even if it's undignified, etc., etc. And to a certain extent, that is true. The pasuk does say, the Gemara quotes the verse, "Ein chachma v'ein tvuna v'ein etza v'neged Hashem," meaning roughly that there's no counsel, there's no wisdom, there's no understanding. None of these concepts exist, so to speak, when it's in opposition to God. And God takes the first seat, and any of these concepts don't have any meaning when it's against God. And the Gemara, therefore, phrases that concept, the makom chil Hashem, ain chokin kavod harav. It's a situation of disgrace to God's name. Then we're not going to give respect even to the rabbi, meaning even to anybody. We're not going to give respect to any person. We're not going to worry about any person's dignity if it's a situation of a chil Hashem. So on the surface, this instinct does seem to be the case, that the halacha is going to take first priority no matter what. But then the Gemara goes on to say, as the Gemara appears in four or five places, starting in Maseches Brachos and Daf Yutes and Daf Chaf, that actually Gadol Kavod HaBrios, that Kavod HaBrios, this principle of human dignity, is such a tremendous principle that it's able to be Docha Losasei Shebetzara, it's able to overcome a Torah prohibition, that we give priority to human dignity even over prohibitions in the Torah. The Gemara says, well, hold on a second, you just contradicted yourself. First you said that in Eitz Ben Chachma, that's the absolute rule. If it's going to involve a Chil Hashem, it's going to involve desecrating God's name by violating the halakha. This is our biggest concern. And now we're saying, well, hold on a second, human dignity actually also can outweigh. So which is it? So Gemara says, you're right, we have to figure out what we're really talking about. We're not talking about all biblical prohibitions. We're only talking about one specific one. And that's actually a gateway to another area, that we're not really talking about biblical prohibitions at all. We're talking about the one, Lo Shosim and Hadavar Shiagidu L'Chayam L'Smal, that when the rabbis tell you what to do, when they innovate rabbinical law, so we're not supposed to deviate from that which they say. So in other words, what's the Gemara mean? It means that if it's a matter of rabbinical law, that if it's a Din D'Rabbanan, so then Kavod HaBrios is able to take priority. But apparently if we're talking about biblical law, so then the halacha takes priority. But then the Gemara goes on to say, actually there are some other exceptions even within biblical law. And it's not even across the board that biblical law always takes priority. First, the Gemara gives the example of, the Gemara gives in the context of Hashavas Aveda, returning a property that was lost. So there are times, the Gemara says, when one is exempt from returning lost property. So let's say if somebody, let's say a person is the mayor from the Monopoly game. So he's got a big top hat, and he's got a monocle, and he's got a fancy mustache and a sash. He's very dignified. And he finds somebody's property, and he's going to have to walk through the garbage dump in order to return it. So So by the time he gets there, it's going to smash his hat and rip his ass and scratch his monocle. It's not going to be dignified at all. So the Gemara says, if that's the case, if it's a zaken, the engel fichvado, if he is a dignified statesman elder, and this action is not going to be in keeping with his status, it's going to compromise his personal dignity, the Gemara says it's exempt. So here you have a biblical obligation, returning lost property, and yet, the Gemara says, if it's a question of human dignity, that's again going to take priority. And then the Gemara actually says, not just that, but really any biblical commandment, what we call a sheva al tasa, if it's a, it's an affirmative. The Torah says do something, and that action would impinge in an absolute sense on human dignity. So then the Gemara says you can shave al tasa, literally meaning you sit home and don't do anything, you can abstain from performing that action, and that's acceptable. As opposed to an active prohibition. When we talk about a don't, we talk about a transgression. So that's what we call kumvaseh. So if you're going to eat non-kosher food, you're going to wear Shabbos, you're going to violate Shabbos, that's an active violation of the Torah. So that again, we don't allow. Now we say, ein etzav ein chachma, that halacha has to take priority. But if it's a passive violation, even if it's Torah law, but it's a question of just sitting back and not doing something, so here again, apparently covered up bria swins. That's very surprising. Right here, if we start off on a premise that the halacha is always going to take priority, and then we find out not always the case, that there are some notable exceptions. If it's a question of rabbinical law, if it's a question of returning lost property, if it's a passive violation, even if it's Torah law, in all of these cases, so now human dignity takes priority. So what's going on? How'd that happen? What's the mechanism that allows this covered abrias to take priority? So in order to take a look at it, I want to look through the prism of three more cases. We saw three cases here, but there are now three other cases that are controversial, that are not from the Talmud itself, and it's a question whether or not they exist. It's a debate among the Rishonim whether or not they're actually part of the list. First of all, Tosis on the side of the page in Gemara's office points out that there's a prominent example that doesn't seem to fit the list, doesn't seem to fit any of the categories. But we know that normally a Kohen or a Nazir is not allowed to go to funerals, is not allowed to be involved with a dead body. But there's an exception. If the person is a Meis Mitzvah, if it's somebody who nobody else is going to take care of, so then, even the Kohen Gadol, even the Nazir, is supposed to become Tamei, is supposed to deal with it. And apparently, it seems that this is driven by Kavod HaBrios. It seems that the concern here is the dignity of this individual who no one else is attending to, and therefore, that becomes the priority. So Tosfos raises the question. So, it doesn't fit any of the categories. It's not rabbinical law, it's a biblical prohibition. It's not passive, it's not returning lost property. This is an active prohibition. Kohen Gadol is not supposed to be involved with a mace. So how does it work? It doesn't fit any of the rules. So Tosfos suggests that maybe there's another thing on the list. That not only the three that we saw in the Gemara, but there's another item, and that is if you have a biblical prohibition, and we've already said biblical prohibitions you don't get off the hook for, but, says Tosfos, maybe you will, if it's a biblical prohibition that's weaker, it's on a lower level. So then, we allow Kavod HaBrios to win, even against the biblical prohibition. So why are we dealing here with a weakened prohibition? What's weak about it? It's not any less severe. So the answer is that we have a rule, the Talmud says, that sometimes we see a prohibition as occupying a lower rung, if it's what we call a lav she'enu shavu l'kol. It doesn't apply to everyone. It doesn't apply to everyone. That already makes it a little bit of a lower status. So the prohibitions of a Kohen only apply to a small portion of the population. Kohen Gadol even more so, one person in the whole nation. So that doesn't apply to everyone. It doesn't apply to Yisrael. It doesn't apply to women. It doesn't apply to a huge portion of the population. So we call that a lav she'enu shavu l'kol. It's a weakened prohibition. And therefore, that's gonna allow Kavod HaBrios to overwhelm it. So what about Nazir? So Nazir also, you might think, doesn't apply to everyone. Only applies to how many Nazirim do we know? So the truth is, it does apply to everyone, because anyone could, in theory, become a Nazir. So everyone is subject to the laws of Nazir. Right now, we're currently not in Nazir. But anybody in this room could decide tomorrow they want to be a Nazir, and the rules would apply. So Nazir is not called a Lav Sheinu Sav HaLakal, but it's still weakened. Why is it weakened? It's another category. It's called Efshir B'She'ela, that you can have it undone. That if you take an oath of Naziris, and then you decide that that was a horrible idea, and you realize it was a mistake, so in theory you could go to a chacham, you can go to a bezdin and have them undo it. If you decide you really, really want a pork sandwich and you're just plotting for it, there's no bezdin in the world that can make it mutter. So prohibition of eating non-kosher food is going to be absolute, while the prohibition of naziris, in theory, you can get yourself out of. So therefore it's also a weakened prohibition, and therefore we can say that maybe it's a lower level, and once again, Tavra Brios can overwhelm it. I don't know if I mentioned, I'll try to say quickly, that I went to this very strange story, that I was in a shul somewhere. Look, if you go into shuls, so shuls have all the svarim they don't see anywhere else, because people who have svarim, they don't know what to do with them, so they end up donating to the shul, so all the svarim that nobody else has, they only find in shuls. So I was once in a shul in Long Island. I saw a sefer that I never saw before or since anywhere else. I never saw it anywhere besides this one shul, this one time. And they opened up a table of contents, and they had a piece there. It was called Maimer Chaviva Sa'adam, an essay on the how dear man is. It seemed like a nice topic, so I decided to look at that. And it turned out it was actually an attack. It was an attack on the Soloveitchik. It wasn't one to directly attack the Soloveitchik. They said that the Soloveitchik had a drasha that was written up by one of the students, and he doesn't understand, the author of the book says he doesn't understand the drasha. He thinks the student must have made a mistake. It's a nice way of saying that I really, that what's his attack? Because the Rav had given a drasha, which I think I did see this written up, and the Rav said, you want to know how important Kavod HaBriyos is, you want to know how important human dignity is, well, who's the holiest person in the Jewish community is the Kohen Gadol. And the holiest moment of the year is Yom Kippur. So the Kohen Gadol, the holiest person, at the holiest moment, that to do the Avodah Yom Kippur, even he will trade all that in for the dignity of the most simple person. And if he comes across a Meis Mitzvah, so he'll trade in the whole Avodah Yom Kippurim in order to attend to the dignity of the most simple person. So you see the importance of Kavod HaBriyos. So the author of this sefer took issue with the drasha. What's he talking about? You're not going to have a Meis Mitzvah on Yom Kippur. You don't have funerals on Yom Kippur. You don't have funerals on Shabbos. If you had a Meis Mitzvah, so he'll wait till Sunday. He'll wait till the next day. So what's the scenario that he's talking about, that the Kohen Gadol is Metame on Yom Kippur? Okay, so that was his objection. So the next day I went back to Yeshiva. This is the most random thing. And I went to the YU library, and I had to look up something in a contemporary work of Silas and Shuvas. And I opened it up, and the page opposite what I was looking at was entitled, subject heading, said, the Indian Kohen Gadol Shafagab Meis Mitzvah the Yom Kippur. And the Kohen Gadol happens to come across Meis Mitzvah on Yom Kippur. And the tshuva was addressed to the author of this paper. He said, concerning your objection to Rabbi Soloveitchik from Boston, Russia, where you objected to, I understand your question, but maybe we could understand it. Maybe he's talking to the Kohen Gadol. Saw him before Yom Kippur, and then before he was still Tameh on Yom Kippur. There's ways to explain it. So happened to be the Sefer Ersel before or since. So the response the next day is totally randomly. So this whole point of the Kohen Gadol being Tameh for Meis Mitzvah, so here apparently this is an example of Kavod HaBriyos, and it doesn't fit any of the rules. So Tosfos says, well, it does fit a rule, because we can make a new rule that if it's a weakened prohibition, so then Kavod HaBriyos wins. Fine. And Rashi probably argues on this. Rashi's writing before Tosfos, so he doesn't take it on explicitly, but Rashi gives a different explanation for this. Rashi says it's not about Kavod HaBriyos, this is a clause in Hilchos Tumas Kohen, that there's a rule that the prohibition doesn't apply if it's a Meis Mitzvah. It's a clause within the concept. It doesn't have its own expression of Kavod HaBriyos. So apparently, this is a disputed principle. Tosfos is saying, if it's a weakened Issa, so Kavod HaBriyos can win. And we don't know if Rashi or any other Rishon would necessarily acknowledge this principle existing. Another major point of dispute among the Rishonim, the Gemara gives an example of a case where Kavod HaBriyos does not win. A case where it's a biblical prohibition that's active. So the Gemara says, let's say a person is walking around with his brand new cloak, And as he's walking, he happens to notice, he looks at the label and it says 100% pure sadness. Right? It says it's sadness. So the Gemara says, he's got to take it off. He's got to get rid of it, even though he's not going to feel so dignified anymore. But this was an example of a prohibition, and therefore, Kavra Brius is not going to be able to win. So that much the Gemara says. But let's say you tweak the story a little bit. Let's say you're walking down the street, and it's not your own garment, but you see the guy in front of you has on the back of his shirt that says 100% pure shatnez, Great American Shatnez Company. But I said, how you can realize it from the back of his clothing that it's shatnez, he doesn't know. So what's the difference between that case and the case we said before? The person doing it is doing it inadvertently. He doesn't realize that there's shatnez there. So right now he's violating the prohibition, bishogeg. So if it's bishogeg, if it's inadvertent, do we say, well, Kavod HaBrius wins, so therefore let him go home, tell your friend, listen, why don't you rush home, I'll give you a call, and once he gets home, call him up and tell him, listen, it's got a problem in your garment there? Or do you say, no, it's a biblical prohibition, doesn't matter whether it's shogeg, doesn't matter what it's measured, you got to change it. So the Rush took the position that shogeg does make a difference. The shogeg is another category you can add to the list if it's inadvertent. So then Kavod HaBrius will win out again, even though again it's a biblical prohibition, but Kavod HaBrius will take priority. While the Rambam doesn't recognize any such distinction, according to the Rambam, it doesn't matter if it's a shogeg, if it's a mezid, if it's a biblical prohibition, then we have to stop the prohibition no matter what. So that's another disputed area. If it's a shogeg, if it's unclear, if it's unknown to the person doing it, so then here again we find a debate among the Rishonim. Some Rishonim say this is another category we can add to the list, and other Rishonim disputing that. A sixth possible category, another debated category, this comes up in the latest farm, Chaim Sanzer, and his Chuvus considers this possibility, the Chuvus Devei Chaim, that if you have a biblical prohibition, but it's not explicit in the Torah, it's something we learn out from a drasha, it basically comes from Torah authority, but it's not an explicit verse, so then says of Chaim Sanzer, then again Kavod HaBrius can win. Even if it's essentially a biblical prohibition as far as its authority, but it's not explicitly there in the Torah, so it's not something you can just point to the pasuk and read it, so then that's going to be a case of Kavod HaBrius winning. To give you an example, this is another strange story that happened to me. I was visiting England once, I was visiting my grandmother in England, and this was many years ago, and I had to, in the pre-beard days, had to shave Erev Shabbos, and apparently I'm the first tourist to ever visit England, because I didn't have the converter for my shaver that would make my American shaver be able to work in my grandmother's British plug, and I couldn't find a converter in any store anywhere nearby. I had to go to great effort in order to travel to a mall to get one, and while I was traveling I was reviewing my notes on something I'd written, and saw the following point. The Rambam says as follows. The Rambam says that, let's say somebody's in the middle of shaving. Just to explain why this is relevant. So while I was thinking, while I was supping out to the mall to get this converter, so I had the following thought that maybe I should try shaving anyway. Because who knows how much power is in the shaver. So I'll get as far as I get. If it runs out, it runs out. So while I was having this thought, so I saw this point in my notes that the Rambam writes that if somebody is in the middle of shaving, and he finds out in the middle that he lost a relative, Rahman al-Islam. So the Rambam is of the opinion that Avelus, at least the first day of Avelus, is a Chiyuv Min HaTorah. So he's now biblically obligated to be in a state of Avelus. So he really shouldn't be shaving. But the Rambam says, if he started shaving, he finishes. Why? Because it's such a bizarre and it's so embarrassing to be half-shaven, so the Kavod HaBrius wins. Which I took as a heavenly sign that I should not play around with a shaver of questionable power, shouldn't try halfway and see what happens. This was a clear simon that that's considered to be a bad idea. So the question is, if it's basically a biblical prohibition, if it's the mitzvah of Avelus Min HaTorah, so then how can you say Kavod HaBrius wins? So Sam Achronim explained, because he agrees with the same principle that the Devei Chaim is saying, that even though it translates to Torah authority, that's not explicit. It doesn't say anywhere in the Torah, don't shave if somebody loses a relative. It's not, you can't find that pasuk anywhere. So it's not explicit in the pasuk. So once again, Kavod HaBriyos can come in a minute. So basically we have now six categories. So we have the category of rabbinical law, the category of returning the lost property, passive biblical law, and the three controversial categories, weakened prohibitions, inadvertent prohibitions, and non-explicit prohibitions. So what's going on here? How exactly does this work? So I think there's two paths to take. On the one hand, you could say what's going on here is a values clash. So you have a clash, a conflict between two different Jewish values. On the one hand, you have the halacha, whatever it is. And on the other hand, you have Kavod HaBriyos, which is also a halachic value. So if they clash, so we have to decide who wins. So maybe we have a point system, let's say on a scale of 1 to 10. So Kavod HaBriyos is a 9. It's very high up there. Achil Hashem, a biblical prohibition, that's going to be even higher. That'll be a 10. So Kavod HaBriyos can't win over that. But a rabbinical prohibition, that's a 6. Or a biblical affirmative commandment, that's a 7. So Kavod HaBriyos, it's a 9. It's going to win on a purely numerical scale. So if we take that perspective, we say it's just about clashing values. So then what would we say as far as our controversial issues? So let's say a weakened prohibition. So probably we take the view that Kavod HaBriyos wins. It starts off as a 10, but it's weakened to a 7. So Kavod HaBriyos can come in and win. Shogeg, we know, also sometimes takes the sting out of a prohibition. So it would be a 10 if you did it on purpose. If you do it by accident, it's only a 5. So Kavod HaBriyos now can win. But the third controversial issue, the question of non-explicit, okay, it may not be explicit, but it's still essentially a biblical prohibition, it should still be a 10. So maybe we take the view, against the Divrei Chaim, the Kavod HaBriyos is not going to win. So if we take that one path in explaining, that it's about a values clash, so maybe that's the perspective we might take on all of these controversial issues. But you could take a different approach also. And you could say that maybe it's based on something else. Maybe it's not based on a values clash. And in order to understand this, let's start with the returning lost property case. So why is it you don't have to return lost property if it compromises your dignity? The guy who lost the property, he has the right to get it back. So what right do you have to not give him his right? So some explain, the Rashi that sounds like this, that the idea is that yes, he has the right to get it back, but we can assume with confidence that he would be mochel on that right, that he would pass up that right in order to protect the dignity of another person. So if he knew, if the owner of the property knew that you would have to humiliate yourself in order to give him this property, look, I don't want it, I'm mochel, I'd rather you keep it, I'd rather you hold on to it than put yourself through an indignity. So what's the principle here? It's not a clash of values. What's going on here is mechila, that the person who has the right to benefit is saying, listen, I'll pass it up. I'll be mochel. So based on that, that could also be what's going on with rabbinical law. When it comes to rabbinical law, so we have to observe rabbinical law out of covet, out of honor for the rabbis. So the rabbis say, you know what, if it means that you have to embarrass yourself, it means you have to humiliate yourself, we don't need it. We're mochel. So here again, the mechila could be the operative principle. But then that leads us to a fascinating conclusion. Because we're not only dealing with the rights of the owner of property or the rights of the rabbis, we're dealing with the rights of God here also, right? A passive biblical commandment. So there we're talking about God's honor. So why would it be that God should say, I'll be mochel my honor for people? And if you want to say that we honor people because people are created in the image of God, Shalom Elokim, so honoring people is a way of honoring God, so that's great. But if I have to choose between honoring people and honoring God, so why don't I cut out the middleman? Why don't I take the opportunity to honor God directly? Why would it be that he would be mochel his covet for that of a human being? And that's the Parshas Balak topic, as we mentioned before, because we find that in a very surprising way in Parshas Balak, that Chazal tell us that you could have thought that the best exhibit to the Ripley's Believe It or Not Museum of Miracles, they have a museum of miracles to show off how well God takes care of the Jewish people. So I got a great exhibit for you. Bilam's donkey. Here, this is a wonderful display of a miracle that was brought about in order to protect the Jews. And that would be a great example of God's honor. And yet, we find just the opposite, that as Rashi quotes in the Parsha, that Chazal tells us that God got rid of the donkey because God was worried about the covet of Bilam. That if this donkey had been around, people would say, oh look, that's the donkey who outsmarted Bilam, that's the animal that humiliated the great prophet. So in order to protect the honor of Bilam, so God made sure the donkey's not around. The Medrash goes on to say, you see how far God goes to protect the honor of people, even of a villain. Imagine how far we have to go with a normal person. And it's very striking, because again, certainly you think, cut out the middleman, especially if it's somebody like Bilam. Why would I choose to honor Bilam over honoring God? So it seems to be, what we could suggest here, is that we have a situation you might call the paradox of the Balgaiva. The egomaniac, you think he's so happy, he's really not so happy. He really leads a pretty miserable life. Because there's a lot of the Balei Musar explain that here, the Balgaiva doesn't respect anybody else. He doesn't think anybody else is important. But he has to pretend that he thinks you're important long enough in order to take honor from you. Because if you really don't think anybody else is important, so then why is it important for them to honor you? If they don't have any significance, so then their honor is not worth anything either. If somebody comes and compliments you and you know he doesn't know what he's talking about, you know he doesn't have any knowledge of the field, so you're not going to be too flattered. It's when somebody knows what they're talking about, somebody who has stature comes in and gives you honor, so then you feel honored. So here this egomaniac, he lives in a paradox because he wants to be honored by people, but he doesn't really think too much of them, so they can't really give him any meaningful honor. So he's got to pretend he does so that he can take their honor. It's not really a recommended advice. So we could suggest that that's what it means when the Mishnah says in Pirkei Avos, "Zehu mechubad hamechavedus habrios," who is it who is honored in this world? He who honors others. So it sounds like, okay, you scratch my back, I'll scratch your back. But it could mean something more. It could mean that the only person who can ever be honored in this world is somebody who first honors other people. If you believe other people are worth something, so then when they honor you, it's meaningful. But if you don't think anybody else is worth anything, it's not even possible for you to be honored. There's no honor that's going to be meaningful. So that says something about the nature of kavod, and that could be why it does make sense for God to be mochel on his kavod. Because kavod builds on being seated to the lower. That the more kavod is waived, is given to the lower source, so the more that lower source is honorable, the more the whole pool increases. But if there's no kavod at the bottom, then there's nothing to come back upstairs. So it makes sense even for HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself to waive his honor to those in the lower level, so that kavod then comes back up. So if that's the case, it means that kavod is really built on mechila. True kavod is really built on mechila. And even at Kadosh Baruch Hu, it makes sense that he would be mocha on his kavod in order to ultimately increase kavod shamayim. The end product is it will be more kavod going to heaven. So when it comes to a disgrace to God, when it comes to a chil Hashem, someone's going to do something against God's words in public, so then that's not acceptable. But if it's just a question of passing up an opportunity, if it's a passive chance to do a mitzvah, so then we'll worry about the kavod of the individual first and let that ultimately become part of Kavod Shamayim. So if that's the case, so then we may take a different, if we take this path, we may take a different approach in all of our controversial questions. They might say that weakened prohibitions or inadvertent prohibitions, at the end of the day, they're still prohibitions. They still play out as overt disgraces to God, so to speak, so we can't allow mechila. But when it comes to the case where it's not explicit in the Torah, then you could say even though the weight, even though the source comes from a significant source, it comes from a power in the Torah, but it's not a chil Hashem because you can't open up the Chumash and see a pasuk that contradicts what's going on. So therefore, as far as the chil Hashem component, that's on a different level, and it could be classified with a missed opportunity. just to mention, we're almost out of time, just to mention one other case where you find these two possibilities playing out. There's a lot more to say about this, but we will try to keep it to one session. Just mention one other case. So there is Gemara Maseches Shavuos, which discusses, let's say you have a Rav who is the head of the Sanhedrin. He is the highest rabbinical court judge in the nation. And he's called to testify in front of the lowest court in the nation. So it's not really keeping with his covenant. He's the highest judge and he's coming, he's being hauled in front of the lowest court. So the Gemara says he's got to go. He has to participate. So Tosu says, why should he have to participate? It's not in keeping with his honor. So it's not covered Hebrews. And it's passive. If he just stays home, it doesn't come. So it'll just be passive. It won't be an active violation. So why should we not say that Kavod HaBrios is going to win out? So Tosfos has two answers. And the two answers kind of match the two possibilities that we've been talking about. One answer Tosfos gives is that it's not going to work that way because it's not active. It's really passive. It's not passive. It's really active. Because even though he'll just stay home and he won't do anything, but whatever the case is that the Gemara is talking about a case where somebody else will do an Aveira because he doesn't come and clarify it, because he's not going to come to Beis Din and say what he has to say, so somebody else will do an Aveira. So there will still be an active Chil Hashem. So that's coming perhaps from the Mechila perspective, that we can't be Mocha in a situation where there's going to be an active Chil Hashem. So even if you're not the one doing it, but if it's going to happen because of your passivity, someone's going to do it actively, so then Kav Abrius doesn't win. The other approach works better with the other side, we're saying. The other answer Tosfos gives is a big chiddush. Tosfos says that we have to recognize that two categories here, that not all Kavod HaBrios situations are equal. Not always the same. Tosfos says there's such a thing as a Gnai Gadol, a big disgrace, and there's also a Gnai Katan, it's a smaller disgrace. So we talk about a Beis Din, not coming in front of a smaller Beis Din. It's not that it's like humiliation for him, it's not a disgrace. It's just not in keeping with his standard. So yes, it's somewhere along the spectrum of Kavod HaBrios, but it's a lower problem. It's not a scandal, it's not a humiliation. It's just not in keeping with what he would normally be expected to do. So Tosu suggests that when we say that Kavod HaBrios wins out over a certain halachic point, so you don't mean anything along the spectrum, you mean a Gnai Gadol, a big disgrace, a very serious offense against human dignity, so then that's going to win out. But if it's more minor, it wouldn't necessarily be true. So that would work well with the idea that we're talking about a values clash. When we say Kavod HaBrios was a 9 on a scale of 1 to 10, so it's a 10. It's a 9 when it's maximized. When it's a really embarrassing situation, then it's a 9. If it's less, then it could be anywhere along the spectrum. And then it's not necessarily always going to be the case that Kavod HaBrios is going to take priority. So just about to add time, just to quickly review the key points that we spoke about. So we have this theme of Kavod HaBrios, again, so central to the 3 weeks period that we're about to start. So we find that it takes a major priority in halacha, even though we normally say that ein chesed, ein chachma, ein tuna, that we don't have any value taking priority over respecting God, makom chil Hashem, ein chokin kavod l'rav, we don't show kavod to anybody in a situation of chil Hashem. Yet the Gemara tells us there are exceptions, if it's rabbinical law, if it's a matter of not returning lost property, or if it's passive, even biblical law, so kavod HaBrios could win. And we mentioned the three controversial categories, Machlokas, Tosfos, and Rashi, perhaps about a weakened prohibition, like Kohen and Ozer. Machlokas, Rambam, and the Rush about the prohibition that's not the Mezid, that is the Shogeg. And the Machlokas of the Rechaim and others about a prohibition that is not explicit in the Torah. And we suggested two paths to understand, which would give us different ways of seeing each issue. So we see this is basically a values class. That's a scale of 1 to 10. Kavod HaBrios is like a 9. It can win out over many things except for Chil Hashem. Or do we see this all based on Mechila? Just like the owner of lost property is Mochel on getting it back. The rabbis are Mochel on their covenant. And even HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Mochel on his opportunity to receive Kavod, because as you saw from the paragraphs of Al-Gaiva, that Mechila is able to send Kavod back upstairs, and therefore that is ultimately the act is in the interest of Kavod Shemayim. That's what we found in Parshas Balak, that even Bilam has covered worried about by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and even though the trade-off would have been that could have been a situation, an opportunity for Kavod Shemayim, but Kavod Avriyos still seems to trump because it creates that well that goes back upstairs. And then we mentioned how both these positions would affect our controversial issues. And we mentioned this one extra point, the Gemara in Shavuos, that says that a prominent rav would have to testify in front of a court that is lower than him, even though, as Tosfos points out, it seems like it's a covered abrius issue. So we saw the two answers in Tosfos, either that it's not passed because somebody else will violate a prohibition if he fails to show up, or that it's just not significant, that there's different gradations along the scale of covered abrius, and we have to make a distinction between a Gnai cut and a Gnai gadol, between a small disgrace and a big disgrace, and it's going to depend where along that spectrum it falls as to what status it's going to be. Okay, we will stop there. I think next week should be normal. As far as I know, but stay tuned. And should have a easy and meaningful Shavuos with Tamas in between. And this should be a wonderful week.